welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me still, as always, is Jim Allen. How's it going, bud?
Hey, John. How are you doing?
I've been better, and I've been worse, so I guess I can't complain too much.
Oh, you can't complain because I'm not going to listen.
I'm feeling the love.
That's it, man. That's all it is. Pure love.
All right, well, we've got a very special show for you this week. We've got a great interview with former Hanshin Tigers MVP and a two-time Triple Crown winner, Randy Bass. And then we're going to discuss the rise of the Yomiuri Giants and the fall of the Lotte Marines and touch on a few other topics. So let's start clearing the bases. All right, well, this is a jam-packed show. We're going to try to get it all in here in an hour. I was fortunate recently to be able to sit down, and thanks again to Chris at Shooters. I actually had the chance to sit down and meet the Oklahoma State Senator, Randy Bass, and have a chat with him in a coffee shop in Tokyo downtown. Let's see, he was the CL MVP in 1985 when the Tigers won it all.
Seems like
ages ago. I guess it was. Then he was back-to-back Triple Crown winner in 1985 and 86, and he got on the verge of breaking the single-season home run record in 1985, but was walked intentionally in every at-bat to close out the series, and he really needs no introduction. It was a great, great chat. We talked for about 40 minutes, and I pulled out a few stories that were some of the highlights, maybe at some later show, maybe in the off-season. We can play some of the other excerpts that I left out of this particular stretch, but I spliced together a few of the highlights, and hopefully you can't tell too much.
As long as you didn't use a chainsaw, I think we'll be okay.
All right, so let's go ahead and take a listen to the interview.
You played for the three managers, right?
I did.
Who was the best of the three, if you can answer that question? Who was your
favorite? Bundelson by far was the best manager. He wanted to win so bad, and he didn't care about records or any of that stuff. He was just outstanding as far as a person, player, you know. I mean, because when I first got here, I didn't take off like a rocket, you know. I mean, I hit 235 at All-Star break my first year, and Ando calls me into the office and with the other players, and I said, look, man, I'm struggling. If you want to get rid of me, go ahead. You know, I mean, I'm being honest. I mean, I'm struggling. It's tough over here, you know. Everybody thinks they can come over and just tear it up. It's impossible. It takes time. It takes time to learn the system and learn the pitching because you've never seen these guys, and they all stop or they all throw here. It's just different. And he said, no, I'm going to stick with you because you're going to be fine. Just go in the video machine and watch more watch the video more and more. So I said, all right. So second half of the season, I think I hit 25 home runs and it got my banger average up to about 285. And from then on, it was okay, you know. But it took a while. It took a long while to really get focused.
Who was the toughest to play for or play under?
The last manager.
Graham.
Yeah. He's an old pitcher that did it the old way, the old Japanese style way, and if he had to run 100 laps, then you had to run 100 laps, and that's the way it was. He was just old style. It was very hard. It was very, very tough under him.
What about players? Favorite players to play with and against?
Oh, man, Takefuda, Okada, Mayumi, Mickey, Hirata, all the Tiger guys were great. And Egawa was one of the toughest pitchers out there. Endo was tough. I mean, Komatsu was tough. All the Dragon pitchers, they had great pitchers as well. Uno and Kitabepu and all them guys. I mean, there was a lot of great pitchers.
Guys who you think could have played over in the States?
Absolutely.
Other than the big guys, the big
I don't know if the players could have played, you know, as far as
the talent level,
as far as playing third base for the Yankees or anything like that. But, I mean, they can definitely play.
What was the hardest thing about your chase for the home run record that fell short?
You know, at that time I'd been here 3 years, and so you see a lot of crazy stuff happen. Like I seen where a guy hit a. He was hitting for the cycle. He had hit a home run, a single, and a double, and he needed a triple, you know. And he hits another double, and he keeps on going to third, and the guy's got the ball, and lets him slide into third, and he's safe. And then he steps off the batting tackle, and he's out. It was kind of strange, you know, and there was no explanation for it, you know. It's like, well, why do you do that? And they said, well, he needed that for the cycle. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. Crazy, man.
But what about your personal experience in the home run chase?
I think the last two games, when Saharo was the manager, you know, and I walked 10 times, you know, and they said, go man aside, the catcher said, go man aside. I just accepted it as, what are you going to do if you break O's record? I mean, come on, this is his record. He's a great guy. I like the guy. He's a great guy, and great athlete, great player, and I just accepted 54 home runs was great with me. I didn't care if I broke it or not, you know. But if they pitched to me, I was going to try to break it. I mean, I wasn't going to bunt like the movie come out, you know. Mr. Baseball.
Oh, okay. What's your opinion of the game now? The game here in Japan now? I'm assuming you've been able to see some of the...
I think it's much stronger. I mean, I think the quality of baseball is excellent. And, you know, people think it's not. They think Japanese players are small. It's not like that at all. I mean, the pitchers throw 90 miles an hour just like they do in America. So I think the quality of the baseball in Japan is very, very is excellent.
Have you been able to follow throughout the years?
I have. You know, when I come over, I get to watch a few games. Like last night, we tried to watch a little bit of the game. It's really hard to say because you don't get to watch enough of it, you know. But, you know, we'll get to see some of the games before we're done.
What about the WBC? I'm assuming you heard about it when Japan won. What did you tell people about WBC?
I'm not surprised. I mean they're excellent players. I mean, quality of, it just shows you what quality players are over here.
I agree. I mean, I told you, when I got here in 90, and in the 10 years that I started religiously watching the sport and watching every day and trying to evaluate a little bit, I noticed that the outfield arms weren't that great. Some of the footwork wasn't really good in terms of maybe throwing in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things they needed to work on. Size was an issue. And even though now some of the guys are bigger, they're so much better fundamentally that it makes up for the lack of size in some aspects.
But you know, if they can ever get away from the old school, that old, and you know how that is. I'm just telling you, you know, I mean, change in Japan is so hard, and whether it's baseball or whatever, soccer or whatever, they got to really get out there and teach those young kids how to do that. And finally, they're starting to do that.
The back-to-back-to-back home runs are something that comes to mind immediately for you. Talk about that 1985 championship run.
Yeah, we had a great team, and actually, Ando-san put the team together. It's a crazy story because Ando-san, it was the first manager that came and picked. He brought me from America, so that and Ta Honda was the guy that scouted me and brought me over here. And we're in the dugout in 1984, and somebody was going to break a home run record. And matter of fact, it was Kakifu, I think, was leading at the time, and somebody had a chance to break the record. So somebody tells him, walk that guy. Don't let him break Kakifu's record, you know. So Ando and I'm sitting on the bench, you know, and we're sitting there, and he says, so they walk him, and the game's tied. So he says, he's talking to Ta Honda, and he says, and he's interpreting, he says, if that guy hits a double and that guy scores and we lose this game, I'm going to quit. That ball ricocheted off that wall out there. He no more than said it. And then boom, it was like that. The ball went off the wall. He quits. He quit. I mean, it happened like that, you know. And then Yoshida came in as the next manager, and we win the World Series, the Japanese Nippon Series. I mean, with a great team, we had the greatest team ever, you know. And I mean, just think, the infielders, whenever Kakifu played third and Mayumi played short and Okada played second and I played first, four guys, we hit over 150 home runs. 150, four guys. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, we had a great team, just a great team. But Ando-san just kind of said some stuff and just, it was crazy. We said, man, don't quit that. Don't quit. Everything's good. Just a game, you know. I mean,
all right, well, we appreciate the sit-down.
Hey, man, thank you so much.
It was really good.
All right, well, thanks again, Randy, for sitting down with us. It was great to actually meet you for the first time and have this chat. And like I said, hopefully we can play the rest at another point sometime later in the year. Tell me, what struck you the most from this from these pieces of interview?
Well, no, I don't be too hard on yourself. You know, that's my job.
Gotcha.
Three things, basically everything he talked about. I think, first of all, talking about his teammates, and I think he was right on about, you know, most of his teammates were great guys, but the players he mentioned as competitors, was kind of interesting, kind of top heavy on the pitchers. Egawa and Endo and Komatsu.
Uh-huh.
But that happens when you're a batter, you know, when you face the really good guys, you remember them, when we talked to Gail Hopkins, he remembered, well, actually, I mentioned his name, but he remembered a batter.
Wakamatsu?
You know, Wakamatsu and the others, his competitors. You know, they were his competitors for the batting title, so he remembered those guys. Anyway, yeah, the players, the Tigers were a great team when he played for them, but they didn't do very well. Oddly enough, because of the manager he didn't mention.
Uh-huh.
He had three managers, the one who brought him there, Ando, who was well-loved by his players. I mean, it wasn't just him. His teammate, Kazuhiko Kudo, told me what a great manager Ando was to play for.
Mm-hmm.
And he put all his heart and soul in the team, and you know, I think he put his ulcers in the team as well. I think that's what drove him out, his health. And the guy he didn't mention was the guy, interestingly enough, the guy who won the Japan Series. Yoshio Yoshida. And now I expect, you know, you would expect him to be, you know, at the top, wouldn't you?
I would expect the guy who, you know, puts the team together, makes all the right moves, gets you to the big dance, and then, you know, gets you the girl too.
Okay, I'm not gonna say what goes after that.
That's the guy you remember. It was, thank you. That's the guy you remember. That's the guy you exalt. That's the guy you bring, you put on a pedestal.
Not getting too personal there, are we, Sean?
No.
Wait, making sure.
All but right. I do appreciate everything you've done for me, bud. Thanks.
Oh, man, we are not going there. Okay, now. Okay, so he didn't mention Yoshida. The best manager he had, the guy who brought him over and helped him work through his problems, which I thought was great stuff, because of Randy Bass's career in the minor leagues was really interesting. He was a very, very productive player. Not a big power hitter in the minors, but a very, very productive player.
In the States, yeah.
States, tremendous on-base percentage. He really never one shot at a major league job. And it just kind of didn't work. He had a half a season in which he played pretty well, and then they gave him basically a full-time job or almost full-time job, and he failed I'm going to say 40 or 50 games, and that was the end of his major league career. Okay, so he comes to the Tigers and starts to fail again. So it was very interesting. I wasn't familiar with that part of the story, so that was really interesting to hear. Now, his teammate told me, Kazuhiko Kudo, one night on the train back from Cebu Dome, said, Yeah, the manager, Yoshida, he took Mondo's team, took it to the Japan Series,
mm-hmm.
3 years, in which they finished, I'm going to say, third, first, third. He managed them 4 years. I think third, first, third, and last. And they were very bad after that. And then, you know, Murayama took over. Please excuse me if I'm a little shaky on the details.
I'm looking it up as you speak. Go ahead.
Anyway, so he didn't mention Yoshida at all. Now, I asked Kudo, you know, why people think Yoshida was a bad manager when he took into the Japan Series. He said because Yoshida got this wonderful team, and his first year he didn't change. His first 2 years he didn't change anything, and then as soon as he won the Japan Series, he thought he knew everything. Started changing things, and the team fell apart.
Okay, to clear it up, they won in 85, of course, and then in 86 they were third, and 87 they were sixth. Then he came back in 97, and they were fifth then, and then sixth in 98. So they were last twice.
Katsuya Nomura, who finished last 3 times in a row. Remembered the guy who came after them who was the hard ass.
Yeah.
I mean, to be mild, Murayama was an old pitcher. We've had a few of those. You know, the pitcher's got to be tough, and he was tough, and no surprise there. So that was the one interesting thing. And the other interesting thing that struck me was talking about his chase for the home run record. Because, what I want to ask you is, What do you, the home record and the cycle record, the cycle hits, which is a pet peeve for me, which I'm going to leave in your capable hands.
Well, the cycle hit, it's nice when it happens. It's just a random thing that happens, and when it does, it's good. But because some guys always fall a triple short of the cycle, I mean, we see it all the time.
Sure.
But that fake cycle incident where the player runs a double into a cooperation triple where this third baseman steps off the bat. I'm sorry, lets him get to the bag, and then the batter steps off the bag to be tagged and turn around and go to the dugout just to get the cycle record. And it's in the record books as such. For me, that just puts all the records in doubt for me. You know, what's really true? What didn't happen? What shouldn't have happened? We don't even know. And I think with all the focus on baseball, and we talked about it when we did the Gail Hopkins interview earlier this year, there's no way in this environment, in this world of social media and the cable and the news stations that are devoted to, I mean, you have Yakuzuki News, and you have Pro Yaku News, and you have every channel doing news highlights with baseball every night. There's no way they could get away with that kind of behavior in this environment. It'd be scrutinized, and I think there'd be some kind of punishment, to be honest.
I do not think so. I don't think the change happens that fast, but I think it would have. I think it will happen, and I think it'll happen exactly the way you describe it. I think it's going to take a little more time. There will be public outrage over this, and you know, a team will do something. Is going to sooner or later, a team is going to do something really dumb, and there's going to be a public outrage. And they're going to say, we better not do that again. Then another team is going to do something pretty dumb. There'll be a public outcry. And eventually, after a couple of years, they'll kind of, you know, but you got to push you've got to realize that what we, and I say this not in a bad way or any sort of condescending way, that we look at baseball a little differently, has a little different meaning. Baseball has become marketed differently in the major leagues than it is in Japan. Japan, it's so much about winning with favorite players.
Mm-hmm.
They wins and they sell players. Mm-hmm. And so if you win, okay, that's fine. Now, they sell, that's the active marketing role. Now, the problem with that is that there's another level to the game, is it needs to be interesting. Now, the problem is that this is anathema to the old baseball guys who say winning is everything, because the thinking is we're selling wins.
Right.
Selling players. Now, selling players records, selling players milestones, selling players individual achievements, whether they're meaningful or not. Oh, we got a triple. Great. That's good for us. Maybe we can sell an extra ticket. No, I'm serious. And if you win, you can say, oh, we're fighting hard to win. This is, I guess, more than winning, is that we're fighting hard to win, because then you can sell your practice.
But, I mean, conversely, if you're record book stuffing and record book robbing with walking guys and not letting them actually compete the way that the game was set up to do, aren't you selling the reverse of that?
Well, the thing is that you're doing it normally to protect one of your guys. Okay. And you don't care. He's got the record. It's like, we can't, just because George Bush didn't get as many votes as Bill Clinton. Was it Bill Clinton who lost? No, he ran two terms as the internet inventor guy dude.
Al Gore.
He didn't get as many votes as Al Gore, but it doesn't make Al Gore president, because it's not what happened. You know, it doesn't make it right or wrong, but people don't remember. I can't even remember Al Gore, you know. He's the guy who got the most votes. So, people are going to forget about it. But because the people who are going to care are the people who got the record. So it's not going to be a quick and easy thing. They're still selling that. It's part of the game. It's going to take a long while to change that mentality. The Giants fans, when Hideki Matsui won a home run title because their pitchers were walking Roberto Pettigini, or they were trying to walk, if he wins the home run title, they don't care how they got it, because our guy won the title. So that's the mentality in Japan, the current mentality. Now, is it changing? Yes.
You know what I'd like to see?
Yes, I do. I want to. No, I don't. But I want to hear what you'd like.
I want to see someone challenged for that home run record in this. Not this season. It's not going to happen. Next season or the coming season, and I want to see the reaction of Japan, Japanese baseball, the players, the Twitter sphere, social media, what the impact is, how they follow it, how they stick it. And I hope it's a foreigner. That would make it even better.
Player. I don't think it would be like, wow, isn't that great?
Well, to be honest, if players start walking guys or pitching around guys, especially in the, like, let's, for example, the last week of the season, and they do something, I think that's really going to be a black eye on Japanese baseball, because it's going to be overreported, overcovered, and not by the media. It's going to be social media that does it.
I think you're spot on with something here, because the Japanese media is so controlled by what editors think, as opposed to what writers think. The editors say, get me this story. How come you're not sending me this story? Because it's the one the old guys think the fans, they're basically tuned into what they thought the fans wanted 20 years ago, what their editors were telling them.
30 years ago.
what they thought fans wanted 20 years before that. Yeah. So it's a long, slow process of opening up. And when the process changes when people can see on one hand what's really happening and on the other hand how it's being reported. And when that gap is too big, stuff happens. The problem is right now is that fans – are so used to caring about these records. When the teams, if they take a new tact and they say, look, we're all about entertaining baseball, we're all about this, or when they take a new marketing tact, and I think this is slowly happening as well, the teams are marketing their games a little differently. And I'll point to these, not the numbers specifically, because that's of little interest, but the NPB released their released attendance figures this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And unusually, they announced them for each team for the same number of games they had played through, I'm going to say it was Thursday's games, and they announced, you know, they counted how many games each team had played, and they said they measured their attendance from the previous year through that many games.
Which is, yeah, pretty difficult to do sometimes because...
Not necessarily, because they're not talking about days, they're talking about games, okay, which is a very fair thing to do, and I think it's probably the most, one of the more intelligent surveys they've done. And anyway, they found that the Central League was down slightly, 0.5%, but that's because Giants attendance was up 10%. Everybody else was down. The Pacific League was down, I'm going to say, 4.6% offhand. But the interesting thing about the Pacific League was that the two teams who, at extreme ends, were the Hawks, who have increased their attendance despite being very mediocre this year. Coming off a championship season and being mediocre, their attendance is better. And
right.
That has been in first place all year after having a pitiful season the year before, has shown the worst decline, being the Chiba Lotte Marines.
Yeah.
What's going on there? And I'm gonna venture to say what's going on is teams marketing their product differently.
Well, they're going to have to market a lot differently. If, like I said, a guy comes along, a foreign player comes along and starts whacking home runs, and it becomes the focus of this home run chase in the second half of the season. That would change how they do that. But getting back on track, I wanted to talk about the story that Randy brought up in the interview about Ando, and it's Muto Ando was the manager he talked about leaving, because Wikipedia tells a slightly different version. It's similar, but a different version of the story about why he left. And on the side, it said that Masaru Uno,
right,
and Hanshin's Masayuki Takefu were locked in a home run battle, and they both had 37 home runs each heading into the last weekend of the season, a two-game set that was going to be played out at Hanshin. And both batters were walked in every at-bat by the opposing pitchers. But there was a rookie named Chikafuku Ikeda who had 9 wins, a rookie pitcher, and he was going for his 10th win.
Yeah, I remember him.
And this was the game was October 5th that year, and the Tigers they scored 4 runs late in the game to take a 6-2 lead. And then Ken Maka of the Dragons hits a 3-run home run to get him within a run. And they walked Uno in his 4th at bat. And that was the guy Randy was talking about. So they walked him, and he eventually came around to score the tying run. But there was another hit after that. And okay. Then the double came.
Okay.
And after that, it was reported that, you know, that was the last game of the season, and it's, you know, it was reported in papers that Ando was planning to finish out his contract and manage in 1985. But then articles started to appear that in the papers that the Tigers were looking for a new manager, and Ando's wife had gone gray with the stress of the season, and it was a complete stressful situation for him. And apparently he got angry and he decided to quit. That's what the Wikipedia site said.
Well, I've heard that it was his health, and that was part of the reason. It would be so surprising to see a manager quit over what the team said in the media. I mean, that was the case in 2003 when the Giants were playing poorly. They were coming off a championship year, and they couldn't keep up with the Hanshin Tigers. Nobody could keep up with the Hanshin Tigers. The Tigers had a great year, a very, very good team that year. The Giants couldn't keep up, and the owner, Tsuneo Watanabe, would get drunk, and he admitted this. He said, anyway, to put a long story short, every day reporters collared Watanabe, "What do you think about the Giants?" And he'd say, "Well, if Hara doesn't win, I'm going to fire him. You know, he's got to win, or I'm going to fire him." And Hara got tired of hearing about it and said, "Well, you can't fire me, I quit.
Yeah. Well, apparently Ando said when he left that he said something to the effect of to the media members who were there. He said, "Thanks for driving me out of the job."
Well, to keep that modern parallel going, in 2003, Watanabe blamed the media for reporting what he had said. That you have to hire a new manager is because you guys reported what I said. What's up with that?
What are you people doing? Who pays you? Oh, wait a minute.
Well, that stuff was not reported in the Yomiuri Shimbun. You can bet on that.
Well, this was fantastic stuff. It was a terrific interview. He's got some other really interesting stories. Hopefully, like I said, we'll put together a little package and splice together some of the other stories, and we'll do that in the off season. But fantastic stuff. Great stuff. It's just hard. It's hard to look up all these things from the 80s and stuff when I wasn't here. And it's interesting to look on Wikipedia and see what the story says in Japanese and see that there was nothing regarding this in English I could find. I mean, I didn't search that much, but there was nothing on Wikipedia that I could find.
Really nostalgic, because I was in my second year here in Japan, and I remember Bass. I used to have a beard then, and sometimes people would point at me and go, "Bass, Bass."
Don't they know that you're 6'3" and thin and much taller than Mr. Bass?
First of all, I was 6'3" then, but I was not thin. I was still fairly fat.
Oh, all right. See, I didn't know you. I didn't get here until 1990, and I didn't get a good look at you until 1999.
Okay. Well, and you got that shock, so that's good. The mental health treatments come a long way.
All right, so let's move right along and talk about the Central League present day, which is on Sunday when the Giants have reduced their magic number to 26. And you want to say that they've gotten better. You want to say that the Central League, the other teams are beating up on each other so much that it has given a chance for the Giants to make a move. You want to say a lot of things, but I looked at something interesting, which was that the guys they're running out there from the bullpen are doing a much better job. And if you go back to the Central League preview that we did before the season started back in March, I think I pointed to their bullpen as one of their weaknesses, because we thought that rotation was just going to dominate and carry them through the season.
Well, that's it. Yeah. That's sort of like... I don't know. It's sort of like I'm trying to think of a good analogy. Finding a weakness with Michelangelo. He wasn't much of a middle distance runner.
Right.
Offense, and you got that starting pitching. It's like finding a weakness is kind of a chore. So compared to everything else, it was going to be their bullpen. Of course, Matheson at that time was a question. And he proved to be pretty reliable. And Yamaguchi's been Yamaguchi, and Kentaro Nishimura stepped up. He had a slow start, like the Giants did. The bullpen is interesting. I think that's one area. The start pitching was good. Now, the Giants got off to a horrendous start. And I think when I think about horrendous start, I just want to mention their first, what are we talking about? Their first 10 games.
They were awful.
Yeah. Now I'm talking about the first 10 games. They were so bad. Excuse me, not even the first. Is this the first 10?
I just remember they started out the first week. They were awful. They couldn't get it going. They couldn't hit. They weren't pitching that great. The games were, as far as I recall, they were low scoring. I'm going to look up as you're looking up as well, because I don't remember every game, but I just know that they were struggling at the beginning. Now, but I did point to some things like their team speed overall, and I did say that the bullpen, it was a place that if you got into it, it was going to yield it was going to bend a little bit more often than it was going to break.
Here we are. Now, the Giants, first after 20 games, the Giants were in last place with they were 6-13-1. Now, that was the good part of the beginning of the season. they basically had two long losing streaks. The first one was through their first their first eight games, in which they were shut out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5
times. I remember that. And I also remember that they didn't hit a home run in their first 10 games.
So that was the problem. One is that they weren't scoring. Now, basically, I looked at that first 20 games, how they played and sort of like, you know, what they did and what they've done since. And what I found was that the Giants, they had shut out that many times. Things are misfiring.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody should be shut out that often. I mean, you have to be pretty pitiful to be shut out that often. So weird things happening. You know, they're also not hitting with runners on, you know, hitting as much as they should with runners in scoring position. You know, they're not getting big hits, any big hits at all, whatever. So anyway, to make a long story short and cut through all the analysis, I looked at a couple of different things. First of all, the big difference between the Giants, you know, Giants before, let's call it, early season and Giants since, because they've been on fire since April 22nd.
Yep.
The offense went from really bad to pretty good. The pitching went from okay to extremely good.
Yeah.
And the part that improved was the bullpen. Is essentially as good as it was good stuff, good now, nothing's different.
Yeah. I just looked at August alone and I saw that guys like Yasunari Takagi, then the rookie lefty Kyosuke Takagi, and then another rookie Seiji Tada, and then a sixth-year lefty. Well, we all know Tetsuya Yamaguchi. They all just became lights out in August. In Yamaguchi, even though he lost two games, he had two wins and two saves.
Yeah, it's been good. He's been in very good. I mean, they made him pitcher of the month, so what the heck? Something's going on there. I was kind of interested in how bad they were when they were struck. And here's what I found was I broke it down. I had trouble. I was looking at, you know, which player is performing and underperforming. Pretty much the whole team was underperforming with the exceptions of Abe and Sakamoto, and Chipper to some degree. They were all, the rest of the team was just terrible. They just couldn't bat. You know, it's like they might as going up to the plate with bat and was probably a little optimistic for most of these guys. So I broke it down by position. Okay, in the first 20 games, Giants were above the league average in OSP. Does that make sense? The on-base percentage plus slug percentage, OSP.
Okay.
No, actually, it's the Japan. It was 627. Okay.
Is it OPS?
OPS. Excuse me, OPS. I wrote, for some reason, this idiot myself wrote OSP on my Excel spreadsheet. Okay. Anyway, who was above average? They were above average at catcher. They were above average at shortstop, and they were above average in center field where Chono was playing. First base was below the NPB average. The Giants' first baseman in their first 20 games were batting the starting first baseman were batting 169.
Yeah, they weren't getting much production from that position.
Second base was Terauchi. He was actually pretty good. Okay, Murata. Here's the big slugger, batting 237 with essentially no power. They had John Bowker in left field, 141 for the starting left fielders. Yoshinobu Takahashi, who's had a great second half, batted 246. The bench was batting 125 with a 353 OPS. Okay, now turn to after April 23rd. The bench is almost as good as the NPB average. And the only position that is not better than average is the starting second baseman, where they've got Fujimura, who's ostensibly a good fielder. Okay. So, across the board, they're just better. The bench is better. They're better at every position. You name it. The Giants are normal. You know, they had a glitch.
Yeah, I mean, you can't play a whole season at full speed, and it just took him a while to get going. And
you can, but normally happens. And I mean, and I say you can. Well, you can't because, but what I'm trying to get at is, usually the pattern is some people are, aren't. Some people are in the middle. Somebody's, you know, usually have three guys at least playing, or four guys who are at least playing somewhere near what you expect. The Giants had three guys playing and six guys watching.
Yeah.
It's just they had so many players having such bad months at the same time.
Well, those days are long gone. This team, it had turned it around. What are they? They're 33 games over 500. They're running away. So we know that the battle is for second place and right. third place. And I think the Dragons, I mean, barring some unforeseen collapse, I think they're pretty much solid for second because they're going to get better. They're probably at their worst right now because they can't really generate a lot of power. They're not getting any production from the middle of the lineup in terms of extra base hits. And so they're not going to score a lot of runs until Tony Blanco comes back, and he's got to come back and be hot, or they have to make a trade or something and get somebody. Maybe they can trade with the Dodgers.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Wait, James Loney, come here.
Not that guy. Goodness sakes. Nobody named J-Lo is playing for the Dragons there.
Anyway, yeah, well, unless there's a new Central League rule sometime between now and now in the middle of September that says teams can pay the Yakult Swallow to play the Dragons, they're going to finish second.
Yeah, and play them at Nagoya Dome. But it really doesn't matter where they play them. They've been beating them up pretty good. So the real race is going to be between or among, I would say. I would put the Tigers in there. I don't want to, but, you know, they've got 41 wins.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much, it's fairly cut and dried. Although the interesting, oddly enough, I think the Bay Stars are going to be the key, or actually they have been the key to the, who's going to be in third place, because the two, you know, you and Michael, I mean, you were giving Michael trouble about everybody beating the Bay Stars, but there's one team that really beats the Bay Stars.
And that's Hiroshima.
One team who can't beat them to save their life, that's Yakult. So there.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be fun to watch and see how this plays. I still think, you know, the Bay Stars can play the Tigers. They're going to get there, have the opportunity to play them and head-to-head and make up some ground there. I don't think they can do it because they have to win almost every game.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, a couple of big games against the Tigers, and they got the Tigers coming in on Tuesday. So this is going to be fun.
This is going to be awesome.
You gotta cheer. You gotta hope the Bay Stars can pull it out. I mean, I love the Tigers. So many of the Tigers fans. I appreciate their tradition like nobody else. But yeah, you gotta be pulling for the underdogs. I mean, if you're a Tigers fan, no, of course not. But yeah, for the rest of us people.
Yeah, and so with the Carp now trying to hang on to third place, I like their rotation. We talked about it earlier on. Look, Kon Otake has 110 games now. Nomura looks like he's a cinch to win double digits. And Kenta Maeda already has double digits in wins. If they can straighten out Brian Bullington, and he pitched well in his last time out, that's a really good crew of four. Maybe they should just shorten the rotation to four and go that way and try to make the playoffs.
You know, they had basically the Bullington, Imura are two guys who are, you know, they come out and give you a good start every third game.
Yeah, they've been up and down. But I like the bullpen, what they've been doing. Nakata, Yokoyama, Kishimoto, they've all, and Imamura, the guy I badmouthed earlier on, and Dennis Sarfarte, even though he doesn't seem to be sharp, he's getting the job done. He's getting the outs.
Cam Nicolaio, I mean, shout out to Cam.
Yeah, Cam's really flourishing in that closer role. So I like what they're doing. What I don't like is the left side of their infield.
Oh, yes.
We talked about Dobayashi leading the league in errors, but Soyogi's going to try to catch him, it looks like.
Yeah.
Or kick him.
Oddly enough, the Carp defense, I shouldn't say that. The Carp defense is much better. I mean, I feel for Dobayashi because, okay, the Carp tried to do some, you know, they tried to make him the next Hiroyuki Nakajima. And that hasn't quite worked out. So they're, you know, they're trying to be him, make him the next pitcher who became a third baseman, who I guess would be Takuro Ishii, who's also with the Carp, interestingly enough. Because he was a high school pitcher who became an infielder in the, he was a high school pitcher who pitched the final at Koshien.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's still learning. He's not, it's been a little bit of a challenge for him. Of course, Hayato Sakamoto was also a pitcher, although I don't think he was a pitcher in high school.
And it was a challenge for him early on. He made a lot of errors early in his career when he took over.
He's still a bit of a loose cannon. Does he have enough of a gun to say he's a loose cannon? I wonder. Okay, but he lets a few fly. So yeah, but he can cover the ground, and you know, that's a good question. Are they good enough to be a? I think here's the question: are they good enough to beat Yakult in a race? And I think the answer is yes. Are they good enough to be a championship team? And I think the answer is no.
No, and I'm as much as I'd like to see them do well, the timeliness or the untimeliness of their poor defense and the way it manifests itself and the way it shows up in certain situations disturbs me when I'm watching. And I'm not even a Carp fan, but they make the most untimely mistakes that you can, I mean, if you could just plan, hey, look, when the game's on the line, let's make sure we, you know, get in front of the ball, the infielders get down, use both hands, make sure to secure the ball, make safe, quick throws. Those are the times when they're loose with the ball.
Okay. That's an astute observation. And I think that's something that comes with confidence, knowing that they can do the job when they need to. And I think that's still a little bit lacking.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Into that, you know, I would like to see, to be honest, I'd like to see, you know who I'd like to see playing for the Carp right now is Jose Fernandez.
What position, at third?
At first, because just to have him there on the bench, talking to the saying, don't panic, Mr. Mannering.
Yeah, just relax. Now, speaking of panic, I think there's a little bit of panic going on out there in Chiba with the fall of the Marines. You know, this team, we gave them a lot of respect, and it seems like, I don't think I jinxed them, but it seems like once I came out of the...
You did jinx them, because that's what you do.
Oh, that's what I do. All right, I've been told I'm pretty good at that, but I didn't jinx Yuki Katakawa's elbow, and he's been gone, and they've missed him. Seth Greisinger hadn't been able to win, you know, for a while. I think he won, June 2nd was his last win, and then he finally won the other day. I think it was August 14th, or no, August 14th he hadn't won either. He won this past week.
Pretty much, he's been pretty solid.
He's been solid, it's just they haven't won the games. I mean, you know.
He went to a stretch where they couldn't win when he pitched well, and then they couldn't win when he pitched lousy.
I don't think he pitched lousy. He was all the starts, let's see, three of the last 11 games were not quality starts for him. So, that was a problem. But,
a lot of things have gone wrong. Karakawa's out, and Hayden Penn, who's looked good every time he's been healthy enough to touch the ball, he's been good. Started out this season, and oh, I think he had a procedure last year, and wow, he's gone again.
He's gone again.
What else has gone wrong with that team?
Takahito Fujioka, the rookie, he dropped out. They had to send him down to the minors, and
he's pitching.
He pitched today. He pitched on Sunday.
He
didn't pitch that poorly, but he gave up enough run. You know, they had a lead early, and he gave it up, and then that game ended up a 3-3 tie. But Narise has been great.
Pitched well. Narise got his hat handed to him the other day. Well, you say that he pitched five innings and then the roof caved in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all but one of his last 11 outings have been quality starts. I mean, he's been there. He's been really steady for him. So he had the one bet.
Always be the guy. Speaking of pressure to be the guy, I mean, I don't hate to go off the Marines, but three hits in 10 innings. Shut out today from Masahiro Tanaka. I mean, a guy who's got the world on his shoulders. You know, it's good to see that. And I think some of the problem is that he has a lot of pitches on his shoulders. Naruse, certainly, it's hard to carry a team for so long. And basically, with all the injuries, it's been, you know, get the ball. They don't have the pitching staff they used to. And that's a tough load to handle. They don't have great defense. The Marines are, I don't know. Well, I mean, they've got Nemoto playing short.
Yeah, and
he doesn't have great range. He doesn't have great arm. I love him as a hitter.
Yeah, he's hit his way into that lineup. Certainly not defended his way into that lineup.
They've got some very good players. They're the Marines. They make a lot. They have, but they really don't have enough in the bank. And what I'm going to say is I like Nishimura. He's a straightforward, honest guy, but I don't think he's the sharpest tool in the shed. I think it's the Marines are a bore under him.
Well, that aside, they really haven't gotten a lot of great pitching like they had in the first half of the season. And since the All-Star break, 11 right. times the starters have gone five innings or fewer.
Right. Ugh.
So that's boring aside and all that stuff. They're not pitching the way they were pitching before. So if they can start doing that again, I think they're going to score. Katsuya Kakunaka is having a great season. Iguchi is going to be Iguchi. Saburo is going to produce once in a while. Satozaki is getting hot. I mean, they're getting production. They're scoring runs. They're not getting shut out every night. If they get that pitching back, they'll be fine.
I agree with you. And I, you know, who is, of course, they were kept afloat in through much of all my, they had a high white cell count in terms of extra bases from Joss White cell.
It's white blood cell, but anyway, white cell count.
If I say white cell, don't get angry.
All right. Just don't say black cell. All right. Well, we'll see how, as I said, and it looks like I'm going to be out of town the last week of September and the first week of October, but I'll be watching on the internet somehow. I won't be offline like I was this past week. Let's go to fielding questions. We did get a comment from Anthony Pang in Australia. Let me read it. Just thought I'd make this comment, even though it's not really a big deal at all. It's somewhat of a milestone for the Australian Baseball League. On Sunday, and this is last week, when Alex Mastry pitched to Kenta Imamiya, it was the first time two former ABL teammates, both of the Brisbane Bandits, faced each other. Then on Tuesday, when the SoftBank Hawks played the Cebu Lions, it was the first time two former ABL pitchers dueled against each other, Yusei Kikuchi of the Melbourne Aces and Hiroki Yamada of the Brisbane Bandits. Then today, Junpei Ono, and this is Thursday, started for the Giants, and he played for the Melbourne Aces. As I said, not really a big deal at all, just an observation from a fan of both MPB and ABL. So, yeah, all these guys who played in Australia. Now, what did you say about the Hawks sending players out to Australia? You said they've been doing that the past 2 years?
Well, they've been sending, into the Australian Winter League. I think the Hawks and the Lions have been sending guys down there. Of course, the Hawks and the Lions were big guys when the Hawaiian League was in its heyday in the mid-90s. Long time Swallows. It's amazing to see how many big players. So perhaps the Australian League is going to become the new Hawaiian League. So, it was nice to see Alessandro Maestri. Got to watch him pitch a little bit today.
Doesn't he have a funky – I mean, I, on my blog, I said he's deceptive and funky with his delivery. And it is kind of weird for a big guy like that to come three-quarter and the way he comes with those – I think he got a lot of people today. He surprised a lot of people with some of the off-speed stuff because they just stared at it. It floated by.
Yeah, well, I think he's kind of an oddball character. I mean, you don't get the guys coming out of it. You don't get a lot of guys coming out of Italy pitching in the, he never made it to the, he never got hired to play in the States. he's basically spent most of it, a lot of his time in independent league ball, but from what I've seen, he hasn't pitched badly. So, yeah, I'm really excited about seeing him here in Japan. This is fun stuff.
Yeah, I like him. He looked really comfortable out there, and I mean, they list him at 183 centimeters, but he looks taller than that, and he's all elbows and kneecaps coming at you, and it's just, it looks like to me, though, that I don't know if he has been injury-prone in the past. I guess we'll see. But that just, it looks like what he's doing out there just puts a lot of stress on a lot of areas of the body, but.
he's been a starter a lot of his career, although this year he was a closer in the independent league. So it was kind of interesting his comment today that when he went the distance, and he says, I haven't pitched 9 innings for a long time, so it felt good.
Yeah, it was, I had that on in the office. I just didn't have time to pay much attention to it, but, you said the accent. He's got an Italian accent with a
Australian English accent. So, I'm really looking forward to see him, and Oryx. I still haven't had a chance to see Oryx yet, so my time is running out on that clock.
Well, we gotta get you up to some ball games in September. It's coming down to it, buddy. You gotta get out there. Tell him to move you.
Yeah, well, play me or trade me or something.
That's right. Unchade me from this desk.
Okay.
All right. So the one other thing about Maestri is I heard that he was the second Italian passport-holding player to play in NPB. And I heard this on the news, and immediately, I don't know who the first one was, but immediately I remembered Val Pascucci, who played with the Lotte Marines in the mid-aughts. And the reason I remembered him is because he played in the WBC for Italy.
Correct.
Couldn't hit an off-speed pitch to save his life.
Okay. Big deal.
But I remembered him, and I don't know. Maybe that'll be my homework. I guess I have another project. Find out who the first Italian passport-holding player was to play in the NPB. If anybody knows.
Yeah, maybe Anthony knows. He seems to have his hand on the pulse of interesting stuff.
Yeah, and anyone else who might know, just send us an email to yakyujohn@gmail.com and put it in an MP3 so we can play it on the show. That'd be awesome, too.
That would be extremely awesome.
All right, well, we've had a long show. We got it all in. Thank you for listening. Good job, Jim.
Thank you. Good job, John.
Thank you for staying up late, and we will talk to you guys next week.
See you later.
Enjoy your baseball.